Well, hello everyone. I would just like to tell my story of following the interview with Joe Robinson. First of all, I'd really just like to wish him luck and hope that everything works out and that he'll soon get a transplant and be able to get back to work. Now, my story has some similarities but a lot of differences. For a start, I'm quite a bit older than him. My kidney problems, excuse me, were also diagnosed in 2006, only they weren't quite as dramatically diagnosed. I went for a routine blood test because I'd had been diagnosed with high blood pressure and the medication I was on required a regular check. So I had a phone call from the doctors. It was the day before I was going away on holiday. It was towards the end of the summer 2006, and the doctor said that they wanted to speak to me. Could I bring a urine sample into the surgery? And I said, what's all this about? And I started to get really panicky, what's wrong? And they said, don't worry. I said, well, I'm going on holiday tomorrow. They said, well, don't worry about it. It's nothing to worry about. Come and see me when you get back. So I went to see them when I got back, and they explained to me, I can't remember now because I didn't take it seriously for another 2 years. I didn't realise how serious it actually was. They said I had, I think, stage 3 kidney disease, and they said it was nothing to worry about at the moment and that they would just monitor me every 6 months. And they got the kidney specialist in from the kidney specialist at the practice where I go. And sorry, I've got a very annoying cat. Go away. Keeps butting me. They just said they'd keep an eye on me and monitor me. And, you know, it was nothing to worry about. They put all my details into a piece of software which tells them what to do, basically, and that's what they came up with. You know, it goes on age, ethnicity, sex, and all that. And so I went on like this for another year and a half till the beginning of 2008, going back for the regular checkups. Excuse me. And then I went to see a different doctor for something completely unrelated. I don't even remember what it was now. And she said, I see you've got a problem with your kidneys. And I said, yes. And she said, have you ever been for an ultrasound scan? And I said, no. So she sent me for an ultrasound scan at the local hospital. And she also refers me to King's College Hospital because I live in Orpington, just outside of London. And I went and registered there. And again, they said, they just gave me an examination and they took blood and all this. And then I think I've been going there, I don't know, maybe about 6 months. I didn't have to go back very often. I went back a few times in that time, I think. And then every time I had a visit to the hospital, they'd send me a copy of the letter that went out to my GP. And on there would be a series of numbers and figures, and I didn't know what any of them meant, except FRRR. FRR, I guessed, meant was ferritin, iron. And I began to wonder what they were. So systematically, I started looking them all up and I realised that they were the different tests that they did for a lot of them were liver function, which they always do anyway, but it's not really applicable because there's nothing wrong with my liver. Touch wood. There was all these numbers and one of them I found was EGFR, a small e, GFR, and then it had a number next to it, 27.5. Now, I looked up this EGFR, and I found out what it stands for, and I can't even say it. It's estimated glomerular filtration rate. Estimated. The estimated bit, it's a certain formula they use, and it's only a rough estimate. It doesn't take into account my age, my ethnicity and all that. So it could have been a bit better than that, or it could have been a bit worse. Of course, I'll never know now. So I put all this into Google, good old Google, and up it came with the most staggering news that I could have knocked me down with a feather, It actually meant I only had 27% kidney function. And they told me it was nothing to worry about. And it was a weekend, so I couldn't even ring anyone to talk to them. Now I could. I realise now that I could ring the wards at the hospital. Always doctors around, excuse me, to talk to. But I didn't know that then. I didn't know then what I know now. Anyway, I went to see my GP the following Monday. And she said, well, you know, when you first came here and we first diagnosed your problem, it was only at about 33% anyway. They never told me. No one ever told me. They didn't tell me at the hospital. No one ever told me what these things meant. It was only that I found out by accident. And, of course, I was quite concerned and I felt absolutely fine. You know, I've never had any symptoms. And now I'm down to, well, at the best, probably about 6%. I thought I heard rain then, but I don't think it was. 6%, and that's with dialysis. And I still, the only symptoms I get is tiredness. If I hadn't been diagnosed, I wouldn't know. I wouldn't have known. Well, I'd probably be dead by now because of the dialysis must do some good. You know, it would have gone down to nothing probably. But in symptoms terms, that's the frightening part. And I have been told of people, and this is what happened with Joe, I suppose. They were pretty much down to near nothing. Well, he was at 10%. That's not too bad. But people, they said, have been really sick and then they didn't know what was wrong and they've been taken into hospital and found out they've got 8% kidney function and less and been really sick. I wasn't really sick at 8%. So I wouldn't have. It's only I found out by accident. At that point, they told me that they didn't know how long my kidney function would hold up. It could be years, it could be 6 months. No one knew. There was nothing they could do, just monitor it, keep my blood pressure down because, you know, that was partly the cause of the problem. You know, just see how things went. I spoke at length with my consultant and he said that I would eventually probably end up on a dialysis. And he estimated from that point it would probably be in about 2 years. Now, when was that he said that? No, that wasn't quite then. Anyway, everything went on all right again. I got over the shock and at least I was in the picture now. And then in the beginning of 2010, everything was fine. I think my kidney function had gone up again. You know, the test had gone up into the 35, I think it went back up to. And everything was fine. And then I went for a blood test in August. And again, it was the day I was going before I went on holiday. 2 days before I went on holiday. I was going abroad this time. And I went for the blood test. And they phoned me up the next day and they said, can you come back up today to be retested? Because, you know, your EGFR has gone down to 19 and that was in 6 months. And we don't know if it's the real result or whether it's a fault and some fluke in the laboratory. So I went back up and, of course, it wasn't a fluke. It was the real thing. They don't know why it dropped like that or exactly when in that 6 months. But of course, then after that, I was being monitored like regularly every month, 2 months. It held up around about that for the next 2 years. In 2012, my consultant said he thought probably by 2 years' time, I would be down to, I think it might have been the year before that he said. I know he said in about 2 years' time, I think you'll need to go on dialysis. The beginning of last year, we had a house fire, which I've talked about at length. I've talked about all this on my timeline. I don't think I've ever talked about it on here, but we had a house fire and we had to move out for 4 months and go and live with my parents, and it was very stressful. At that point, my kidney function was about 14%, but then it dropped rapidly to June. It was at 5. I was supposed to start on dialysis before that, but because I was at my parents, I couldn't do it. But that wasn't the only reason. There were three options open to me. There was the hemodialysis, which Joe described, which I didn't want to do because I didn't want to spend 3 days in hospital. Not only that, but I've got a guide dog. He wasn't allowed into the ward where they do the dialysis. And you have to be on there for about 4 hours, 3 to 4 hours each time, 3 times a week. Plus, if I didn't have my dog, it would mean having to wait for transport to go and come back, because it's quite away from here. You're talking about a whole day. That would mean leaving my dog 3 days a week, which guide dogs would not find acceptable. You're not supposed to leave them for more than 4 hours at a time. So it was either, if I chose that option, it was I'd have to get rid of my dog and I'd have to spend 3 days in hospital and another 4 days being miserable at home, because I can go out with a cane, but it's not my chosen form of mobility. So the other two options were, one was APD, which is assisted peritoneal dialysis, which is where they you go on a machine overnight and it's a fluid exchange. It's not blood. It's one of the options that Joe was talking about. And you go on a machine for 8 hours at night. I initially wanted to do that one, but my husband is Nigerian and he wasn't in the UK at that time. And they used to make an adapter so that a blind person could take themselves on and off the machine, but they stopped making it due to lack of demand. So it meant that I needed somebody here to do it. Now, I've got two sons who at the time were about 20 and 15, but I didn't want them to have to be tied to doing stuff like that for me, really, realistically. Also with this thing, there's a screen. It's like a computer, probably a bit like the machine that Joe described, in that if something goes wrong with it, alarms go off and all sorts of things, and you have to read the screen, and there's a helpline, 24-hour helpline, and you ring them and they ask you what's on the screen and they tell you what to do, basically, which I couldn't do on my own. Also, I didn't really want to be tied to a machine for 8 hours. I could have had an extension pipe to go to the toilet, and you can come off of it once if you can take yourself off. Once in that time, you can go downstairs to make a cup of tea or whatever. So I was left with the other form, which is called CAPD, which stands for Continuous Ambulatory Peritoneal Dialysis, and that is why they call it CAPD, because it's such a mouthful. And Joe is right to a certain extent that you have 2 to 3 litres of fluid. I have 2, but they're not actually in your stomach, as in where your food goes. They're in your abdomen, which is lower down, what most people call their stomach. It's not really. It's the abdomen where you've got your organs, like, or if you're a woman, you've got your womb and stuff. And it works on, by osmosis, you have all this fluid inside you. It's glucose-based. You can get a different one, which is starch-based, which works slightly differently. you can get more fluid from that one, and you can leave it in longer. The osmosis brings fluid from your bloodstream in through the peritoneum, which is like a filter, and it brings along with all the nasty, crappy things that you want to get rid of through your kidneys. And then you change the bag. I do it 4 times a day, every 4 to 6 hours. I have a catheter fitted inside my abdomen. I had that done under local anaesthetic. I've been on it 1.5 years almost. Had that done under local anaesthetic, and then they let it heal up for a little while. There was a delay in me starting because, there was no attachment for a blind person to take themselves on and off. It's not a machine. It's I have somewhere back in the distant past of this year done a demonstration on my own timeline. If anyone is interested enough to go back, I think it was under audio mo, I'm not sure. But anyway, it's really basically just a small piece of equipment into which fits like a little round dial. And off of the dial comes 2 tubes. One goes to the bag full of fluid, of clean fluid. The other one goes to a drainage bag, and it works on gravity. The drainage bag goes on the floor. I attach my tube to the dial, and then you unclamp it and turn the dial, and the fluid will drain out from my abdomen into the drainage bag. Then at a certain point, you turn the dial when you think it's all come out, and you drain the next lot in. That's basically, it works on gravity. You hang the bag, the drainage bag goes on the floor, so the fluid drips down into that, and then you hang the bag up higher than your head, kind of. I've got mine on the back of my wardrobe. Well, it's a built-in wardrobe door, and it'll drain down into my abdomen. The tricky bit for a blind person doing this is the connecting and disconnecting of the tube, because you can't touch the end of it. because you can get a serious infection called peritonitis in your peritoneum, and it can be very, very serious. It can, I think it probably could kill you if it went neglected long enough. It also can destroy the peritoneum so that you can't use it for that type of dialysis any longer. You have to do a lot of hand washing. You have to, you know, be very clean about doing it. But you can't touch the end of that tube with your hand, or it can't touch anything else in the transition from a little place where you plug it in to unscrew the cap that's on the end of it. Then you have to transfer it over to the dial and screw it on there till you finish draining the fluid out and back in. And then you have to transfer it to another one where to put a new cap on the end. And it's the transferring that's really dodgy, because you have to, if you can see where to put it, it's fine. So the company that make all this stuff were supposed to come up with something, and they left it about 3 months. And we kept chasing them. In the end, the day the nurse from the hospital came to train me how to do this, we didn't know how I was going to do it. We had to devise it between us over 2 days. In the end, we came up with the idea of a board. It's just like a plank of wood. She stuck a placemat on it, and she cut out 3 squares where I plug in the line for the disinfection cap to come off, where I plug in for it to drain it, and where I plug back in to get the new cap on. And I used to put my thumb into those like indentations. And because if you clap your hands together like that, unless you've got some problem, like motor skills problem, if you put one hand somewhere, the other hand can always find it. If I put my thumb of my left hand in one of these little, like a bay, it was like a little bay, like an indentation, I knew that my right hand would come towards it. Now, I've discovered over the last 2 weeks, I suddenly realise I'm not using them anymore. I've put the old board away. I haven't thrown it away. I've got just a table mat now. I stick my organiser, as it's called, onto there, because it's got suction cups. And I don't need any form of adaptations or anything, because I'm so used to doing it now. I've done it so many hundreds of times. the outlook for me... again, is a transplant. I've just been through some of the workup tests. I've had a test for HIV, hepatitis B and C, chest X-ray, Doppler scan, and the last thing I've got to do is have a heart valve echo scan before I can go on the list. I have had an offer of a kidney from my husband. There are some complications because... well, he's black and I'm white, but that's not the problem. The problem is we've got different blood groups. In a live match, the tissue match isn't so crucial as if it comes from a cadaverous donor. I hate that expression. So we've got different blood groups, so it would mean a lot of immunosuppressant drugs for me beforehand, and a lot of killing off of antibodies and stuff. If I were to accept his kidney, I'm in a real dilemma. I don't know what to do. I feel awful taking it. I don't know what to do. It's something I need to really do some soul searching, and I have been for the last 3 or 4 months, because he's willing to give it. He's also had all the tests and is okay to donate it. But I don't feel I can put someone else's life at risk for myself. Both my sons, who are now 22 and 17, have offered as well. There's no way on earth, although I was thankful, you know, I was grateful, I mean, I could take my children's kidneys. I don't like taking anybody's. I don't even like someone to have to die so that I can have a life. But, you know, at the end of the day, we have got this self-preservation instinct. And, of course, I don't want to die either. And if they're already dead, then I don't have so much of an issue with it. Although... a live kidney is going to last longer, usually, if it's not rejected, longer than one from a deceased donor. So that's where I'm at the moment. I don't find it that restricting. It's a pain in the neck sometimes, having to do dialysis. I don't really find it very restricting. It's just part of my life now, and although I complain about it, it's pretty pointless to complain about it, because if without it, I wouldn't be here. So I also due to the dialysis, become anemic quite quickly because there's a hormone produced by the kidneys called erythropoietin, which helps in the production of red blood cells, and which your kidneys don't do if they don't work. So I have to give myself injections regularly for that. They don't go into the bloodstream, they just go into my leg, into the under the skin. The diet, yes, you do have to watch your diet. I don't, my potassium level's always been okay, so I don't really have to watch it. Sometimes it's got a little bit low, which can also be quite dangerous, so I have to increase my fruit and vegetable intake. But my phosphate levels tend to be a bit high, so I'm on these tablets called phosphate binders, which you eat after meals. And I have to try and cut down with things that have shells, like eggs, nuts, seafood. All things, these things are high in phosphate, as is milk, dark fizzy drinks like Coke. I don't drink that at all now. I don't drink alcohol. I haven't done for years, but not because of my kidneys, just because I don't like it and I don't agree. I don't like what it does to people. And I don't have any fluid restrictions, thankfully, because I still pass adequate amount of urine to, and you know, the fluid from the dialysis to be able to get away and drink normally, which is a godsend. I don't like the idea of being thirsty, which I'm not very often, because I've got all this excess fluid on board. So I think my body sometimes just takes some of that. If I don't drink enough, it'll take it back again. So all in all, there are worse things. I just feel very weary and worn out sometimes. I can't do what I used to. And that's been the hardest thing to accept. I don't have any pains, and I don't get headaches, and I don't very often feel sick. Sometimes when I'm doing the dialysis, I do feel a little bit nauseous, because it's draining my, it's pulling inside, and it can make your stomach ache, like period pains, for those who know about such things. But I don't have all those symptoms. I just have this very wearying feeling at some of the time. I haven't got the stamina I had, and I don't always sleep very well, which doesn't help either. Sometimes I get very restless, and I get a bit of itching, which comes and goes. I don't get that all the time, but sometimes it'll mean the level of something's too high, probably phosphate or calcium, and then I'll get itching, which is, it doesn't last for long. It lasts for about 15 minutes at a time, but it's really irritating. It's usually when I'm just about to drop off to sleep, or when I just wake up and I'll start itching and it's all over. And you'll itch in about 15 different places at once, and you haven't got enough hands to scratch it. But anyway, I don't want to go on too long, so I've probably gone on over my time. Well, not my time as in audio boom, but, you know, in time of people's tolerance. But anyway, I just thought I'd come on as a response to that, because I found it very interesting to hear the similarities and the differences between mine and Joe's story. And I must admit, I've found it quite an isolating experience. I've equated it recently to the difference between a first-time guide dog owner training at a hotel or training centre, or training at home. Because when you're on the hemodialysis, you see other people in hospital, and you can compare notes, and you see people regularly, and if they feel ill one day, you can say, oh, well, I sometimes feel like that, you know. But when you're at home on your own, that you have no one else who knows what it's like, your family are very nice, they try and be supportive, but they have no idea. Because one of the other things I forgot to mention is, with this type of dialysis, you have to empty your bowels regularly. Excuse this topic being raised on here, but it is all part of it. So each patient is given a laxative regime. And sometimes, depending on what you eat, sometimes you need the laxatives and sometimes you don't. So sometimes you have to take them regularly, because you just can't risk any blockages, because then the dialysis, the tube gets in the wrong place, or it gets flattened and you can't drain liquid in or out. I mean, I did have that happen to me last year, and I was hospitalised for 3 days to try and sort it out, which we did. But they could show from an X-ray, instead of the tube pointing down towards the floor, like in the middle of my stomach near my belly button. It was actually, they poked me in the ribs right on my left-hand side, up where my bra comes down to, and said, that is where your tube is pointing. No wonder you, when you try and drain the fluid out, you are in a lot of pain. And so you have to keep taking these things regularly. And sometimes you don't need them. So obviously the result is you get an upset stomach. And some mornings, because you take them at night and then they kick in the morning, sometimes you wake up. That's the symptom. It's not a symptom of the kidney disease. It's a symptom of the treatment. And that can make you feel, well, to coin a phrase and to excuse the pun, like crap in the morning. And, you know, other people don't understand it. They think they do, but they don't. So you do feel very alone at times. And, you know, it would be nice, but it's difficult to get any groups together when you're all spread out everywhere and, you know, you can't get to meet. So I think there might be some Facebook groups. I have looked. I couldn't, but not recently. And I've actually found someone else on Audioboo. Boom, who has had a kidney transplant, and so she was in a bit of a similar position to me in some way, so I've been able to talk things over with her, which has been quite helpful. Anyway, I'm not going to take up any more of your time, so bye for now, and good luck to Joe, and take care, everyone.